I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Andrew Roffla, Deloitte Zero Trust Leader for the U.S. Cyber Practice, and Richard Price, Deloitte Zero Trust Leader for the North-South Europe Cyber Practice and Director in the U.K. To learn more about Deloitte, visit Deloitte.com. Welcome, Andrew and Richard. It's great to have you both with us today.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Delighted to be here to talk to you today.
Awesome. Well, we talk about a lot of cyber issues on this podcast, and one of them, the big emerging issue is getting more and more attention is the concept of zero trust. But of course, that leaves folks wondering, what is that really? Why should organizations be making a shift to zero trust, and how do they do it? So Andrew and Richard, who better to help us holistically understand what goes into all of this than the two of you? So really excited. I think a good place to start is, let's start at the most basic question of, what is zero trust?
Yeah, sure thing. So, you know, zero trust, there's a lot of buzz in the market, and organizations are trying to wrap their head around, what is this? And really, zero trust is a conceptual framework that helps organizations secure the ubiquitous nature of modern enterprise environments. And so the network perimeter has essentially dissolved for most organizations as they deal with, you know, evolving business models that are forcing them to adopt modernized business processes, you know, deal with complex IT ecosystems, and fundamentally digitizing their businesses. So the legacy, you know, defense in depth approach to cyber defense that took a very perimeter centric approach and applied implicit trust to anything that was internal to the network perimeter is really, you know, no longer fit for purpose. So at its core, zero trust commits to a risk-based approach to enforcing the concept of least privilege access control across the enterprise. So in doing so, users and device connections are contextualized in order to inform more of a risk-based access control decision posture to enterprise networks, workloads, and data.
Yeah, I think it's one of the other things that zero trust really brings is that because it's no longer relying on the concept of the static perimeter, it's much more dynamic as an approach to cyber. And it means that we can be more responsive to the business and more agile for the business.
Awesome. And with that context, what are the cyber components that make up zero trust? Because it's not one, but many things, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So if we look at the zero trust model, it's really built upon some, you know, strong foundational capabilities across five key technical pillars. And those are identities, workloads, data, networks, and devices. In our framework, we actually represent telemetry and analytics and automation and orchestration as horizontals in the framework because we see those as supporting capabilities that integrate with each of those key pillars that I mentioned before. And really, it's the stitching that holds all of this together, right? So ultimately, shifting towards more of a zero trust approach enhances security posture and minimizes risk. It's based on a set of foundational capabilities as well as some modern capabilities across each of those key pillars that I mentioned before. And fundamentally, you know, organizations, as they start to move towards a zero trust approach to security, they need to understand, you know, what the IT asset looks like, right? So what assets does the organization have? What is the criticality of those assets? What business processes do those assets support? And who and what should be able to access those assets from a user's workloads, data, networks, and devices perspective.
Yeah, I think also rather than, you know, just concentrating on the technical side, one of the things that zero trust drives us to do is to look at some of the softer sides to cyber as well. So to those five technical pillars, we add four domains of organizational change. Really, one is around culture and organization, and that's looking at how to manage the organizational change the shift to zero trust will drive over time. And then also looking at things like the architectural governance and how architecture is led across an organization. Because to join up zero trust initiatives over time, you really need to have that strong governance, which is making certain that everything that cyber does keeps contributing to the zero trust journey without necessarily having to have a rip and replace journey to get to zero trust. And then there's implications also for operations, the way we operate the environment and bringing some of those things to bear. And then at the heart of all of this is policy. The way we do policy around zero trust changes a lot. So we have to marry together both those technical pillars, but then the softer side of how we manage and govern cyber.
And what is fueling the need for zero trust? I guess to build on that further, why is now the right moment to rethink cyber and what has changed?
Well, I think in general, every organization at the moment is really undergoing kind of massive digital transformation. And so everything's being connected with everything. And we're seeing that it really doesn't matter the size of the industry or the size of the organization. There's just a huge increase in the volume of connectivity and collaboration, which is driving us to have something which is more fit for purpose than the old perimeterized model. We're seeing, within that, there are some real clear business drivers that keep coming to the fore when we talk to our clients. And they tend to be things around the theme of business agility, of cyber being able to support the business quicker and being closer to the business. And then we have specifics around things like mergers and acquisitions, where the long trail of integration that follows a merger can be very expensive and very limiting, and zero trust is seen as a way of accelerating that. So there's a series of different drivers. Cost is another one which keeps coming up over and over again, driving down costs, particularly cost of compliance.
Yeah, I think I'd add to that also, Richard, is you know, what we're seeing organizations, one of the primary drivers of moving towards this more, zero trust approach is, as organizations expand into high risk geographies, they're looking for ways to kind of segment different parts of the environment off and have almost like a kill switch, where if something occurs within one particular geography or one particular business unit, that the organization can really kind of contain the blast radius of a potential breach or a potential event by adding these micro perimeters around their environment and really preventing the ability for breaches to move laterally within the environment. The other kind of use case that I think is driven to the top of the priority list for a lot of organizations, especially given the implications of the pandemic, is being able to secure the remote workforce. So most organizations almost overnight had to go to an entirely remote workforce. And how do you provide, remote access connectivity to your users, to your, third parties that have to connect into the environment, but doing so in a secure way, moving away from legacy virtual private network or VPN technology to more of a, point-to-point secure remote access capability that would allow for remote access, but in a secure way, giving access to specific applications or assets to those users and only what they need to get their job done and nothing else, right? So moving away from this kind of network-based remote access to more of a point-to-point secure remote access capability. So that's really driven a lot of organizations to accelerate their adoption towards zero trust.
And I feel like a lot of what you both just said kind of answers this next question, but to solidify it and to dive deeper, why is this so exciting?
Oh, well, I think for a long time, cyber's been the department of saying no. And we've tried and talked for a long time in cyber to talk about enabling the business. But really, zero trust is a vehicle that allows us to do just that. And in the same way that IT over the past decade has moved closer to the business and become more integral with the way the business works, zero trust provides a vehicle for cyber to become closer to the business. And particularly with the operational and the organizational changes that zero trust drives, I think that it starts to feel a bit like DevSecOps for the entire operation, for the entire organization.
So zero trust has this compelling value proposition, but it also seems like it can be a little difficult to get started, perhaps a bit intimidating, especially with everything that organizations have had to do in the past year that was unprecedented. What should an organization do to shift to a zero trust posture? Are there some steps either of you could share or both of you share together that would help organizations get started?
Yeah, so you know, a lot of organizations are stuck in this analysis paralysis where they hear the word zero trust, but they don't really know what it means. And it, you know, more importantly, they don't really understand what it means for their organization. So there's a lot of, you know, misconceptions out there that moving towards a zero trust model requires a big bang, kind of rip and replace technology transformation. And that's really not the case. So, you know, it's likely that a lot of organizations are already doing some things that align to the concept of zero trust as it relates to least privilege. So it's important to kind of, you know, step back, understand what it is the organization is trying to protect and why, really have kind of a strategic vision of what you are trying to protect and why you need to move towards a zero trust kind of approach. And then look at the capabilities that you have in place and where the potential gaps are with regards to what it is you're trying to protect and where you're trying to go. Right, so we really focus and advise our clients that it's really important to take more of an iterative and incremental approach towards addressing gaps. And then one thing that's you know may seem counterintuitive with most cyber transformation, a lot of organizations focus immediately on crown jewels. And as you're moving towards a zero trust mindset, as you're implementing more modernized controls, that fundamentally can be different in the way that they operate in the organizational change management around them. What we recommend is start with a low risk set of targets, whether it's a low risk set of applications, a low risk user population. With any transformation, there is a possibility for disruption. And what you know, the last thing that you want to do is impact critical business processes, right? So start with low risk targets in order to minimize the potential disruption to critical business processes, and then implement those lessons learned along the way as you move into you know, higher risk areas or higher criticality business processes and assets.
I agree completely with what Andrew says there. I think one of the things that's interesting about zero trust is that the benefits from zero trust accrue right across the business as well as just to cyber and IT. So it's important that you have a clear roadmap and that you know you work through the different options on the roadmap for which the business benefits are of interest. And that means that no two organizations' journeys to zero trust are the same. Everyone's journey is quite different. And we see you know huge differences in where organizations start and what order they do things. But one of the things that we do see is that there are generally some no regret moves. That even while you're planning what your roadmap would look like and starting to select those early wins, the no regret moves are pretty consistent. And they tend to be things like federating your identity or consolidating your identity stores, understanding where your data really is and the sensitivity, sorting out your architectural governance, those kinds of things. So there are some quick wins or some no-brainers to start with, but then absolutely agree with what Andrew's saying. Find somewhere that's going to have measurable impact, but if things go wrong, it's going to be containable, and you can learn from those mistakes.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Richard, because things you know can be the roadmap isn't flawless, so of course things can go wrong. But better, I guess, what should companies try to avoid in creating a zero trust environment?
I think. First of all, you can't go out and buy a zero trust. As Andrew said right at the start, this is about a new approach to doing cyber. So investing too heavily or concentrating too much on the technology side alone without understanding that there's organizational shift here and that you need to get the support of the whole organization and start demonstrating the worth of the program early on. Without that, you do tend to, we see a lot of organizations going down technical rabbit holes and losing sight really of the benefit of why things are being done.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, Richard hinted on this, but I think it's really important to get consensus across the organization on the need to move towards this new paradigm. Fundamentally, if you're going to implement security controls and change the end user experience, you need to understand and be able to articulate how that's going to impact your end users, what that experience is going to look like, why that experience needs to change, and really reach that consensus, not just from the security organization, but across the IT organization, the end user organization, the end user support organization, because, help desk tickets, for example, they're going to look a lot different when end users have to call in to request access for different applications. And so, you know, to Richard's point, this is an organizational wide kind of culture shift. And so focusing on Zero Trust as a, you know, technology initiative or a security transformation initiative is not the best approach. It's really important to look at it as a really as an organizational shift and to reach consensus across the organization on the reason and the need to move towards this new mindset and this new paradigm.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that this is a fundamental shift, particularly for the cyber organization. We, as an industry, we've spent 30 or 35 years building perimeters and defending them. And what we're saying now is the perimeter is becoming deprecated and replaced with something else. So that's challenging at an organizational level for cyber, but it's also quite frightening for a lot of cyber people at a personal level. They wonder what that means for their role and their training and the skills that they've got. So there's a really big organizational change in communications program that has to go with any significant shift towards Zero Trust.
Fantastic. Well, Andrew and Richard, this has been so comprehensive on a really hot topic, like I mentioned earlier. So thank you so both so much for taking the time to join us today and explain all of this.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Andrew Roffla, Deloitte Zero Trust Leader for the U.S. Cyber Practice, and Richard Price, Deloitte Zero Trust Leader for the North-South Europe Cyber Practice and Director in the U.K. To learn more about our sponsor, Deloitte, visit deloitte.com, and you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.